Blog Talk Radio.
From the San Francisco Bay Area, it's time for Live from the Bay with Joey. Here's Joey.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Live from the Bay with Joey. This is Joey, and today we have an exciting, interesting show because with us we have James Wilder, who is better known as an actor, entertainer, architect, and designer. Not too often are we able to talk to someone of this caliber. Let me tell you a little bit about James. Now, Neil Young wrote, "It's better to burn out than fade out away," but for actor, architect, designer James Wilder, neither option is acceptable. Juggling artistic mediums like the three running chainsaws that earned him notoriety on the streets of New York and Los Angeles, and later on stages throughout Europe, committing only to what truly inspires him, be it film, TV, stage, a stage role, designing award-winning Hollywood Hills homes, or an exclusive line of leather jackets and jewelry. Wilder has been successfully merging creative spirit with entrepreneurial instincts since his early teens. Recently, Wilder had the opportunity to play a great role in the soon-to-be-released indie psychological thriller, Three Holes and a Smoking Gun, and that was just too juicy of a role to pass up. So co-starring with Joaquin de Almeida, Rudolph Martin, and Richard Edson, Three Holes and a Smoking Gun has since accrued a slew of awards, including the Grand Jury Prize, Best Lead Actor for Wilder at the 2014 Red Dirt International Film Festival, Best U.S. Narrative Film Feature Film at the 2014 Laughlin International Film Festival, and Best Screenwriter, Scott Feivelson, at the 2014 Downtown Film Festival in Los Angeles. The film also screened at the Winter Film Awards in New York City February 25th through February 28th, where Wilder took Best Actor, and will screen at the Garden State, well, this has already happened, at the Garden State Film Festival, March 19th through the 22nd in Atlantic City. And so, would you please help me welcome all the way from Southern California, Mr. James Wilder. James, I hope you're there with me.
I am absolutely 100%. How are you?
How are you doing?
Good, good.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. You know, we're located in the San Francisco Bay Area. My understanding is that you grew up in Sausalito. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm native. I'm native San Francisco area. I grew up there. I went to Stuart Hall on the top of Webster and there in Fillmore on Broadway for,
oh, of course,
I think from the age from 4 to 14. And when Playland was in business way out there at 49th Avenue and 47th.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I was living.
I remember that when
for
I was
a long
small.
Time. So, yeah, I think I pretty much started my street performing days in San Francisco about the age around 10 years old. Pier 43, the Cannery, Ghirardelli Square, as sort of my, and, you know, just the beginning of being an entertainer, so to speak. So,
and then, if I read correctly, then you moved from there, you went to Paris, is that right? Was your mom living out there?
My mom's Parisienne, so she was a transplant from Paris to the Bay Area, and then I got spotted, ironically, by an international booking agent when I was 14, performing in the Ghirardelli Square in the Cannery, to go perform for a contract at the Lido in Pigalle in Paris. So I was, and the Moulin Rouge. So I was performing at the Moulin Rouge, you know, in Paris when I was 14, living there by myself for probably about 6 months.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. That must have been very interesting and a great adventure.
Everybody says, hey, what was it like? I said, it was just like the movie, except they don't speak English.
Mm-hmm. So did you speak a little bit of French?
I did. Yeah, I did.
Mm-hmm. But, so that always helps, yeah. Right? When you're, especially yeah, when you're going into another country. I mean, I speak Spanish fluently and a little bit of Italian. So, you know, it does help when you're going to, outside of the United States, to absolutely. Europe, et cetera. It helps when you're able to speak another language. So now carry us forward from that point. If I understand, it wasn't long after that you received a role for a Broadway hit called Sugar Babies, right? And that, am I correct?
Yeah, that was part of the, you know, progression through. I was street performing down in Venice Beach, actually. And while I was street performing down there, I kind of earned some notoriety as the guy that juggled the three running chainsaws, because I had this one-man street show where I was, you know, blowing fire and doing tightrope and chain escapes and juggling, knife throwing, all kinds of stuff. And it was a show that out in the streets of San Francisco, A. Whitney Brown, who later became a, you know, head writer and performer on Saturday Night Live, and Harry Anderson, who, you know, ended up with that TV show that Night Court that was on for so long. Some really cool people, you know, originated right out of San Francisco street performing scene, which was really great. And I kind of migrated down south here to Southern California, and I was performing in Venice Beach. And then oddly enough, one day somebody came up after the show, you know, the show where I'd passed the hat. I was 17, and said, "Hey, there's somebody that wants to put you, offer you a movie part." And I said, "I'm not really interested. I've never really met any actors that I really like. It's just not sort of my scene." A very sort of kind of a Northern California, you know, kind of grounds on Southern California for some reason. But, you know, some of it's true. And some of it is just like Hatfield and McCoy rivalry. And I said, "You know, I'm not really interested." And, somebody that was there said, "Listen, you want to get this thing called a SAG card." And I said, "What's that?" They go, "It's a Screen Actors Guild card." I said, "What's the big deal? I'll just get it later." And they said, no, it doesn't work that way. You have to get Taft-Hartleyed, which means the only way to get one is to have a part in a film. And the only way to get a part in a film is to have that card. So it's a catch-22. So if you're getting offered to get Taft-Hartleyed on a regular, you know, on a major picture, take it. So I said, you know, I said, "Okay, well, who's the film?" They said, "Well, you'd be auditioning, you know, to get into a band in the movie." So at the time, the big bands were Aerosmith and Van Halen. "Oh, yeah, that'll be pretty cool." I said, "So who's the band that I'd be auditioning to get into?" And they said, "The Village People." And I was like, maybe that's a Pasadena, you know, I don't know. So, anyhow, they came back and said, "Listen, you can do a different scene. They just want to have you in the movie, blowing a fire and doing the thing. It seems like it'd be a kind of cool novelty." I said, "Who else is in the movie?" They said, "Steve Guttenberg and Bruce Jenner." And I go, "Wow, I'll do my scene with Bruce Jenner." So the first scene that I ever did, ever, on screen, was with Bruce Jenner when he was the decathlete. And, you know, needless to say, you know, whatever that is, 25 years later, you know, it's just how things change, you know. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, things do change, right?
Right.
You know, let's go back. I'm interested in this this chainsaw, juggling three chainsaw, and they're actually running at the time that you're doing it. Okay, right. And then I'm interested in finding out about that. And I mean, that's pretty scary, I would think. And then on top of that, this blowing the smoke out, you know, I've seen people do that. And I just, I've always wondered how that's, I mean, how blowing fire, how that's actually done.
Lighter fluid and blowing it, you know, out of your mouth, breaking it up into a fine spray, sort of like a trumpeter that, you know, purses his lips and sprays it to, you kind of carburete it, just like a carburetor that breaks up, you know, fuel and mixes it with air, and then it combusts as soon as it hits a igniting source. So, yeah, it's dangerous as hell, but it's really cool and very effective, especially when you're like 11, 12 years old on the street. And it's sort of a natural thing, which is odd enough when you go to Paris, you know, street performers in Saint-Michel and all down there on the left bank. You know, it's like there's mm-hmm. street performers and artists and painters and jewelry makers, and very bohemian, you know. So that's what I really love and still love about San Francisco, how bohemian that whole enclave is. And it's very mm-hmm. artistic. Probably why I wasn't so fascinated with actors, because the whole acting thing seems sort of, in an odd way, sort of superficial, you know, when you put it up against the backdrop of, like, artisans, you know, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely right. And we do have, you know, I was born in San Francisco. My mom's originally from San Francisco. There is something that is born within us here in Northern California is I think we just view ourselves as very separate. And mm-hmm. I think we might even have more of an affinity to the Northwest than we do to Southern California. And we view Southern California as totally something just so different.
Isn't it? The hatred between Northern California, well, let's just say San Francisco and Los Angeles is this. It used to be called, instead of Southern California and Northern California, Upper California and Lower California. And when they were making movies, it's a very famous period of time that they would, this was just a bunch of orange groves down here, but it had perfect lighting and weather that was very, weather permissive for filming. Mm-hmm. That when they would mm-hmm. finish the movie, they'd go up to San Francisco because it was old money. It was a real city, and Los Angeles was not a real city, mm-hmm. and they would have their rap parties. And it was either the St. Francis or the Sir Francis Drake. I always confuse the two, but the one that's directly mm-hmm. across from Union Square. Fatty Arbuckle, who was at that time the Charlie Chaplin of, you know, kids film star, but he was American, had through drugs, drinking, and a rape on a girl. A girl died in a party that there's a very famous picture of Fatty Arbuckle sitting on the running board of his Duesenberg with his hand on his chin like it's all over. And the entire international press, it got blamed that this happened in San Francisco. So they were sister cities at that time, Los Angeles and San Francisco. And at that time, being politically correct, San Francisco said, we are cutting the sister city tie. We want nothing to do with Los Angeles. Look at the hell that it's brought down on San Francisco's name. This wasn't a San Francisco deal. That was those stupid actors that brought their party up here and killed a girl on cocaine, and now we're getting blamed for it. So it's like the Hatfield and McCoys. You know, it's like a 100-year feud over a pig. But that's where that goes. Coming back. So it's interesting being from both areas. I was always wondering, why is there this one way, you know, people from San Francisco area do not like Los Angeles or anything about it. Yet when you talk to people in Los Angeles about San Francisco, they're going, oh my God, I love it up there. It's so pretty. And I thought, wow, what is this? Like, there's definitely a one way upset, but that's what it is.
I want to touch on something that I found really interesting. Because I myself do many things outside of doing this radio show. I do acting, and I'm a singer and a songwriter, and I have my hands in a lot of different things. So when I originally heard and saw your work, I thought, well, this is interesting because he has different aspects of his artistry that he shares, which is really cool. Let's talk about the homes that you design. You're really untrained as an architect or an interior designer. However, you've designed and transformed these lots into just beautiful homes. And I'm interested in knowing about that and how that happened. And my understanding is that there's even some celebrities. Correct me if I'm wrong. But even some celebrities that live in these homes own these and properties. So tell me about that. I mean, how were you able to go from acting and from juggling, blah, 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 to designing these homes that are just phenomenal pieces of art, really? So tell me a little bit about that.
I think that all comes back to San Francisco. That one thing that was really cool about San Francisco is that whole bohemian artist aspect, and you know, the post Haight-Ashbury period and just everything that was going on, tie-dye and all the really cool expression oriented stuff that happened, you know, in that area. I So what happened basically for me there was when I was performing and I had this show that was, I built my own props and, you know, with flaming torches, and pretty soon I had a lot of props, you know, come-alongs that are something for, you know, putting tightrope system together. And I pretty soon, when I was 16 in California, you're allowed to drive, you know, I had a van. So I made this van like a custom show van, had a stage on the roof, and I was able to warehouse all my equipment. And I moved, when I finally left, I would go to the Mardi Gras once a year, drive this thing across the country, mm-hmm. and perform mm-hmm. in that thing. So I was traveling with this show from Africa and Asia to, as I told you, the Moulin Rouge. And then when I became mobile and was able to drive, I was able to do that with this vehicle. So I kind of migrated down south. And when I did that, I was living in this custom van on the water by the beach at Venice Beach. And I was performing there. So that was like my first living space and multi-purpose type thing. So everything that I was kind of doing, and this is real San Francisco stuff, is multi-purposing thing, where they would take, I don't know if you go back this far or remember this, but they would take old Sterling mismatched forks and spoons, and they'd cut the head off it and turn it into really cool, like, spoon rings, bracelets, mm-hmm. and jewelry. And this was like the very beginning when I was a kid watching these artisans turning what's discarded as kind of junk into art and jewelry and whatnot. So that's sort of where that started with me. When I finally started making money as an actor, or significant money, I should say, and I wanted to really like reside down in the hub of where all the work is, mm-hmm. I decided to find some teardown of a house and, you know, rehab the whole thing into a really cool sort of like, you know, artisan home. And I seemed to have a really good eye for that. And I would do it out of garage sales and estate sales and auctions, and just like rehab what I would call like anchor pieces, where I'd find like the old hard top to a Mercedes 450 SL. And I would use that as the a low slung coffee table. And so he had the roof of a car mixed in, you know, with black couches, and people are like, what is that? Is that the hard top to a car? And I went, yeah. They go, whoa, what a cool coffee table. And then I found a 1950s surgical light. And this surgical light was something that I used as an anchor piece into for the lighting mode of my house. And, you know, would just integrate stuff. Hang on just one second. It's too noisy. Picking up on the phone. Yeah. So I would just integrate different lighting concepts and utilize just stuff that was just really odd, anomaly-oriented curios into floor plans and interior design concepts. And so I started to do that really well. Then I moved to New York, and I was studying with the Group Theater, and I got very inspired with Elia Kazan and the Group Theater, which was under attack years later for McCarthyism and all being, you know, finger-pointed as being communist. But I really like the mm-hmm. idea that they all live, worked, wrote, directed, edited, acted together as a core group. And so I became inspired by that and built these multiple properties that are all right next door to each other, and tried to do like an artist colony like they had. Wow. And I would predominantly lease out to other artists. And I've had great artists here like Stevie Wonder and Steven Tyler and Stanley Tucci. And I mean, on and on and on, the list goes on, you know, Tom Ford and Annie Leibovitz, you know, from every sort of genre that would necessarily, I would maybe work alongside, but meet them and just be able to be graced by being in the presence of, like, in my opinion, genius artists, and learn things, you know, from them, and them really, you know, loving being in what's basically an artist space that would communicate on what I call like an aesthetic band wave to, mm-hmm. you know, speak to an artist where they would come here and want to create. So that's sort of the umbrella, very San Francisco thinking. You know what I mean? It's very
right. Right now, very, how many actual properties? Know, how many actual properties, James? Do you
10.
Actually
I've got
have?
10 separate living spaces, all in the same neighborhood, that all either are across the street or next door or behind, you know, in that same area. So it's like,
oh, that's great.
You know, yeah, it's really cool.
Before our time runs up, because I want to touch on a few things and we're running out of time, but I want to know how you got involved in this new project, Three Holes and a Smoking Gun, your role in that, and how people will be able to actually view this and see this. And then my second part of the question is, I want to know what projects you're probably the most proud of in your career thus far.
Well, let's see. I guess, well, backing it up a bit, from the thing that you were just mentioning of people in this, you know, micro bubble that get very twisted and their life becomes myopic as far as this is my entourage and this is people.
Right.
I've come across a lot of famous people. I think it's very rare that I've seen that kind of description. But when that description that does happen, and it does, it really reverberates with bad press to everybody. But I do know in going out with some girls that were far more famous than myself, that when you are eating and you're somewhere very simple and someone will walk up and say, look, I don't want to disturb you, but can you take a picture with me? It's like after a while, you know, when they say, I don't want to disturb you while you're eating, but I am. And do you mind taking a picture? And then if someone acquiesces and does it, then it just sets up a whole queue, you know, a whole queue of people behind. And all of a sudden, you know, you see where those people are living inside a bubble, and it seems like it's hell. You know, they can't go anywhere because it just creates like a Beatlemania pandemonium to some degree. For myself, I wasn't interested in hitting that strata, whether I wanted to or was able to. We don't know, because I didn't really pursue that arena. But I was very interested in staying an artist and doing a multifaceted types of things between stage, television, film, and tactile art. So I took a bit of a sabbatical after I felt like, I did some movies for Miramax, and I did a couple, TV shows that we won all the prizes that there were to win with, Emmy for Best Series and whatnot. And I took a little bit of a period to just travel and enjoy my life and create the other art applications that we spoke of earlier. And then this project came along, Three Holes and Smoking Gun, which was very interesting because I was kind of just working on an offer basis, and not in an arrogant way. I don't mean that. I just mean in a more of a my own private Idaho. You know, if something came to me and it was really cool, I would have a look at it and say, hey, this seems cool. This one seemed to be a really cool project to do basically because the whole movie kind of rests on my shoulders. So if I was able to do it really well, it would be very satisfying as an artist. And if I failed at it, well, it's all my fault, and I'd just have to suffer the slings and arrows of misfortune. So when this project came up, I got involved in it, obviously, and we filmed it in New York, and then it was a simple, it's a simple sort of My Dinner with Andre or a Sam Shepard oriented type piece like True West, not comparing it to those great films, but, and then when this film all of a sudden started to win, for myself, like Best Actor, three different, categories, and then I won an Independent Spirit Award, and the movie won like Best Feature. You know, it was really great for a little independent film, and myself to feel really fulfilled in an artisan way that it gets appreciated by your peers, So that's what took me on the journey of this picture. And I kind of felt, when they say, what is your next project? And I say, after winning all these awards, I'm sure nothing, my next project will be a failure. How do you kind of, raise the bar for myself on this thing? But that's sort of what made that, you know, journey on this film so cool. So it played the my favorite theaters, which are the Lemleys, and those were the, you know, where Whiplash and sort of the art house films play. So that came out about a month ago, and I think it's available now on demand. So I think that's where it's available currently. I remember one time it was something that really shocked me is from that movie Murder One, I got voted in as a lifetime member to the Actors Studio, which I was telling you prior was so inspirational for me with the whole Elia Kazan period. And I did a play, an original play called Sidewalk Bazaar that was directed by Frank Casero, who did Hatful of Rain, which there was a beaten character named Polo, and I named my dog Polo from the play.
Oh,
oddly enough, later went to go do this original piece in the, at the Actors Studio, and then they said, as the audience was coming in, I go, that guy looks just like Al Pacino. And they said, that is Al Pacino. I go, Al Pacino's going to be watching me do a play?
Oh, how funny.
And I was like, oh, it was a trip. That was like just so
surreal. Yeah, I could imagine.
So, James, again, I want to thank you for sharing your great story with us today on Live from the Bay with Joey. I want to thank you again. And let's thank James Wilder all the way from the Los Angeles, Southern California area to join us today. So thank you, James. And folks, again, let me give you his, again, we've given the websites, but I just want to make sure that you're able to go to them again. That's jameswilderactor.com and themodernvillas.com. So I want to thank you for joining us today on Live from the Bay with Joey. Stay tuned for some of our upcoming shows. And again, we want to thank James Wilder all the way from Southern California. Be sure to check out his websites, check out his films, and it was a pleasure having him here with us. All right, so till the next time, this is Joey saying...
Thank you for joining us today on Live from the Bay with Joey.